Welcome to the Ed Morrissey Show podcast. What a Monday today is. We're recording on Monday. This will go up on Tuesday. But joining us, as always, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, Andrew Malcolm, at AH Malcolm on Twitter or X, if you prefer. Of course, over at RedState.com, always in the VIP section, sometimes even outside of the VIP section. And Andrew, the hostages have come home. After 2 years, a little over 2 years, hostages have come home. The last 20 remaining living hostages.
So it's an appropriate day because it's Canadian Thanksgiving. So Thanksgiving.
That's right.
For that.
Happy Thanksgiving to you for Canadian Thanksgiving. Yeah. And of course, it comes at a good time for you because, of course, the Steelers beat the Browns yesterday. And you should have a day to give thanks that it won't be the last
Sorry,
game.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Ed, you're not coming through.
So we'll skip right over that story.
everybody beats the Browns these days. What an ownership. Jeez,
it's a tough league, man. It's a tough league. But to be serious though, I mean, this is a huge story. Donald Trump stopped another war, ended another war. Now, I mean, this is maybe not over quite yet because there's still some other phases to go through, but he's got a ceasefire in place and he forced Hamas to cough up the hostages. That's a pretty big deal here for Donald Trump. That's a real feather in his cap.
I agree. Absolutely. I'm curious, not to be cynical, but I'm curious what side deals were also made. It is a wonderful thing. It's just so brutal what's happened to those poor people. And I guess there's a whole bunch of dead bodies that they must have had in a refrigerator unit the last 2 years. It's just, the whole thing is disgusting. And it's one of those news stories that I would like to turn off whenever it comes on.
Well, I'm happy that it's over, right? And I'm happy that the shooting war aspect of this seems to be over too. This is, again, not necessarily over for good because there's a long ways to go. And Trump has a 20-part plan. And right now we're on bullet point three. Which was the return of the hostages. So there's a long ways to go before we can ensure that this thing is over, but Hamas doesn't have any more leverage left. So there's not really much they can do now except comply. And it's pretty clear now that Donald Trump basically outboxed them. He got Qatar, Egypt, to basically tell them that if Hamas didn't release the hostages, that they would have nowhere to go. There would be no place where they would be safe. And that's actually pretty remarkable. That's actually a pretty remarkable change from 2 years ago.
It is. And it's very impressive what he's done. Now, the side deals, back to that.
Yeah.
The side deals. Qatar is getting to use a training base in Idaho for its pilots to learn how to fly F-16s. Turkey has an appeal in, some years ago, Turkey bought Russia's sophisticated air defense system. And then it wanted to buy the F-35, which has all kinds of cutting edge tech in it. Not just about flying, but about defeating air defense systems and so on. He wanted to buy it, and we said no, I think quite rightly. So I'm hopeful that that stays in place. But when he visited the White House, was it last week or the week before, he asked again that if he could buy F-35s, and Trump said he'd think about it. So that may be part of the deal here. All these things always have wrinkles that you don't see, or more often that you don't anticipate, unanticipated right. consequences. So, but bottom line, point number three is done, and it's wonderful.
Yes, it's wonderful. We'll see how well it holds up. But again, I think basically Hamas was out of moves and Donald Trump basically made sure of it. Now, he was in Sharm el Sheikh. Well, first off, he was at the Knesset. Did you watch any of the Knesset speech this morning?
I did not. No.
It's actually pretty interesting. Why, I didn't watch it all. I watched part of it.
Why is it interesting?
Well, because Donald Trump was clearly winging it, right? I mean, he had a prepared speech. It wasn't just entirely his stream of consciousness, but you know how Trump is when he gets on the stump and he starts feeling comfortable. He starts leaning into just saying whatever is on his mind. And at one point in this speech, if you haven't seen this, you really should look it up. He says something to the effect of, he starts lauding Bibi Netanyahu as a wartime leader and a statesman. And then he also congratulates and lauds Yair Lapid, who is the opposition leader, right? So he's mindful of this. He's not trying to upset the balance. He's talking about both men being great men and how fortunate Israel is to be led by both of these men, and everybody in the Knesset's applauding and all this kind of stuff. And he says, while we're at it, Mr. President, talking about Isaac Herzog, right? Mr. President, why don't you give Netanyahu a pardon?
Oh,
and I mean, the whole place erupts, right? And he says, champagne and cigars. Who the hell gives a damn about champagne and cigars? And I'm laughing because I know this is really an egregious diplomatic faux pas. Yeah. Normally, it'd be egregious. Yeah. But, Donald Trump just delivered victory into their hands. And so he could get away with a whole lot more today than maybe he would next week or the week prior. Right. Today, he can get away with this. And people are laughing, right? Netanyahu's laughing. I think Lapid may have been laughing. I'm not sure about that. But people start chanting, bee, 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 bee. And then he says, he turns to her. So he says, yeah, that wasn't in my speech. He says, that's probably controversial, but it shouldn't be that controversial. And he moved on. It's like a total Trump move.
Very Trumpian. He knows, well, first of all, he loves media attention, but he also knows how to get it. And he knows how to get it in a not quite jocular, but sort of semi-outrageous way that will get him more attention. It's uncanny the way he can do that. And it's why everything he says or doesn't say, remember this summer he went away for 2 days and everybody said he was dead? I mean, it's the way he uses media and teases media it's fascinating. But it works to his advantage. Now, in the first term, it was self-destructive because he would have a theme and then he'd get off on something else and ruin the whole theme of the week for his policy address. And that was part of the reason why he lost, I think, was because it created turmoil. This time, I think, thanks in part to Susie Wiles, he's more disciplined. And if he goes off script like this, it's generally superficial or tangential. So it doesn't change the course of events or the whole coverage of the story. Because, I mean, if you're going to go get a hurricane briefing, you don't want to talk about how you hate Mitch McConnell, okay?
Right.
Because that then becomes the story. And he used to do that. This time he's not doing that.
Well, I think he also just learned a lot about how Washington works the last time around. And that may be the reason why Wiles can work with him, is because he understands now what didn't work the first time around, and he's willing to listen on some things, which he clearly wasn't that first year.
And he did the same thing in the campaign last year. When she was the campaign manager. So, yeah, it's working out. He's got a much better team this time because the first time he took a lot of recommendations and they weren't Trump people. This time he's got Trump people. He's had 4 years. I think this, as angry as he was over 2020's results, I think these 4 years put him in a much better position this time to accomplish a lot more.
Yeah. Speaking of accomplishing more, I mean, we can hash out the hostage deal and what it means for the Middle East. I mean, I think it's most significant development for peace in the Middle East since Donald Trump bombed Iran's nuclear facilities and basically took them off the chessboard. But if you're Chuck Schumer, and you're seeing Donald Trump wing his way back from Sharm el Sheikh, which he's on his way now, he'll be back at the White House this evening as we're recording this on Monday. And you're watching Donald Trump come back triumphant from actually, you know, with the big peace 2025 picture with all of the world leaders. And you're sitting there keeping the government closed because you don't want to pass a clean CR and negotiate while the government's open. And Trump's coming back and all you can still say is Donald Trump is the devil. I mean, if you're Chuck Schumer, what is this? What does this moment look like to you?
Who, Chuck Schumer, who is theoretically Jewish, you'd think he would be double delighted. That no, well, he's part of that old generation, and they're stuck in the confrontation mode, and they don't get social media, they don't get a lot of stuff, so he's kind of a duck out of water with his granny glasses on. And just totally dissonant. I mean, he almost everything he says is so tone deaf. And theoretically, he could be a leader. Of course, some other people could be too, but they're not. So their idea of clever is closing down the government and then when it's open, giving long speeches. You would think, what, 11 months after that disastrous defeat, that they might have learned that, you know what we're doing doesn't work. So,
I mean, the stakes are so petty now, though. I mean, this is a guy who just gave us Middle East peace, you know, for the first time in at least 2 years, right? This war has been going on for 2 years. He's the first guy who's able to stop all of the wars that have been going on around there, at least. You know, if it doesn't last for 50 years, right, or 1,000 years or something like that, I get it. But he stopped one of the worst wars that has been going on, the other being the one in Russia and Ukraine. You come back and you say, what? I don't want to pass your CR because you still have to, you have to meet with me. And I mean,
well, you know, they won't do this because it's so smart. But what he could say is, you know, the president has had a major accomplishment, and we should all appreciate what he's done diplomatically. Now we need to do something domestically, and we're prepared to sit down with him this afternoon to talk about how to do it, and then find a face-saving way to get out and open up the government. But it doesn't seem
I have a sneaking suspicion that Donald Trump's response to that would be something like Jack Palance and City Slickers. You remember that movie City Slickers with Jack Palance and Billy Crystal?
Jack Palance. Yeah. No.
Okay. Billy Crystal is completely intimidated by this guy because he looks dangerous. And he is.
Well, he is. Yeah.
He turns out to be a sweetheart actually in the movie, but at the moment, you know, Billy Crystal's like terrified of this guy, and he's trying to jolly his way past this guy. Jack Palance looks at Billy Crystal and says, "I crap bigger than you."
You know, that does ring a bell. You know what I remember? One of the first movies I remember, besides the original Robin Hood with Errol Flynn, one of the first movies was Shane. And Jack Palance and with Alan Ladd, and Jack Palance was the most evil bad guy I had ever seen. I mean, he was so just, he was evil's evil twin. He was just so evil and heartless. And of course, Alan Ladd won. But so I've always, he's just stuck out in my mind. Here I am, well, I wasn't even 10 years old watching Shane. So Jack, and then remember when he got an award and then he went up and did one arm push-ups on the stage?
Yeah, I remember that. It was for that movie. He won the award for that movie. He got the best supporting actor for it. And he deserved it because he was really good in it.
In Shane?
No. I'm sorry. In City Slickers.
City Slickers, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was good. Well, we'll see how it goes, but certainly the leverage, the weight of the leverage has swung in Trump's favor. And the Republicans in Congress should shut up, basically, and let him handle it.
Yeah, yeah. I would say that if Democrats knew it was smart, well, and they haven't done it with smart so far in this entire thing,
they would
just very quietly let the CR pass and then get back to negotiating, because the White House has made it. You can't possibly top what Donald Trump has achieved this week. It's impossible. You can't. You're going to look like an ankle biter.
Yeah.
No matter what you do.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's phenomenal what he's pulled off, and it won't change their Trump derangement syndrome, but it certainly changes the balance of power in the public narrative.
I just find it amusing to consider what's going to happen when you come back. All right. To get back, though, because this actually goes to your column this week, right? Which is, you and I have both written about this now, which was that the Nobel Peace Prize Committee handed the award to Maria Machado, Maria Corina Machado, who is the opposition leader in Venezuela. She's united the opposition in large part because Donald Trump is facing down Nicolas Maduro, right?
Yeah.
Rather than give the award to the guy who's actually stopped now seven wars, you know, six, seven, eight wars, there's different counts, people use different counts, but certainly several. He stopped several conflicts. And achieved at least one comprehensive peace deal between Armenia and Azerbaijan, which, by the way, were six, seven, or eight more than Barack Obama got when he was first elected president, and won the Nobel Peace Prize. And and yet, they didn't pick Obama. Now, Machado actually kind of...
Wait a minute. You said they didn't pick Obama.
They didn't pick Trump. They didn't pick Trump. Now, Machado actually kind of stuck a thumb in their eye by dedicating the award to Trump, because I don't think she was expecting to win that.
She dedicated it to him for his support of the Venezuelan freedom movement,
right,
which in the column I said, that's a great honor by itself internationally, you know, to be
Absolutely.
Credited with being a big backer of that. Well, okay, in fairness to the Nobel Committee, which doesn't deserve it, but in fairness, what he's doing is eligible for next year's prize.
I don't buy that for a second. Wait a sec.
This is what the column was about. The deadline for applying or nominating for the Nobel Peace Prize is January 31. So he was president for 11 days. Okay. Now, flashback to 2008. The deadline was exactly the same, January 31, and the Nobel Committee gave it to Obama anyway. And what I quote the chairman of the nominating committee in the column, years later, he admitted that it wasn't based on anything he did. The only thing Obama did before the prize came out that year was his apology tours overseas, apologizing to foreign countries for the nation that just on blind faith elected a two-year senator as the first Black president of the United States. So he's apologizing for the country that just did a generous, trusting thing, which is ridiculous. And anyway, whatever he did in 2009 should have been eligible for 2010. So the chairman admitted that it was based on, wait for this, his speeches, hope, the hope that came out of his speeches. It was an aspirational award, which is complete BS, okay? So what I said was the way out, what I suggested was the way out for the committee is give it to Trump next year or give it to Trump and Melania next year. She's been negotiating quietly with Putin to get the kidnapped Ukrainian kids back with their families. Now, he's not going to do that, but it's a generous effort, aspirational, but actually happening, as opposed to, gee, I hope Obama does something peaceful. In reality, the winner of the 2009 Nobel Peace Prize, Barack Obama, joined the war by European powers to overthrow Muammar Gaddafi, the leader of Libya, which created that lawless state where terrorist groups now feud and train to go into Africa. And set up the Benghazi night when Obama went AWOL for 16 hours and four Americans got killed, including an ambassador, with no help, no backup, no reinforcements, no plan to help them on a very tumultuous 9/11 in 2012. I mean, all over the Mideast, you might have thought, well, but they didn't. And then Obama appeared after whatever he was doing for those 16 hours of darkness. He appeared and avowed swift justice, which, of course, there has been none of. And then he flew off urgently because he was behind schedule for a couple of fundraisers with Harry Reid in Nevada for this campaign to beat Mitt Romney. So, whenever I see a picture of Obama, I just think of those poor Americans who didn't have any backup for getting murdered and left alone in Benghazi. And then, of course, the whole Washington establishment appointed Mike Mullen, the retired admiral, to look into this. And so he, what a crock of something, to look into and within what they call accountability review board. Yep. So he looked into the whole Benghazi nightmare. He studied only the papers that Hillary Clinton's chief of staff gave him. He never talked to Hillary Clinton, who was left in charge that entire night. And he said, well, there's no one really responsible. Really? So, he suggested moving a couple of desks around in the State Department. It's just a shame. And I would, in conversation, I would use much stronger language. aspirational peace award to Barack Obama, they should ask for it back.
Yeah, well, I'd like them to also have them retract the one for Yasser Arafat. And I think Bill Clinton would actually agree with me on that one, too.
Of course.
Yeah.
He's the guy. He's the guy that turned down the two-state solution.
Yep. Bill Clinton is still bitter about that to this day. Bill Clinton had the deal. And look, if Bill Clinton had made that deal and Arafat had agreed to it and they stuck to it, the last 30 years would have been pretty much different. You wouldn't have Hamas. You wouldn't have Iran's encirclement strategy. Things would have gone a lot differently. You wouldn't have people dead. There'd be a whole lot of people alive that are dead right now.
And if Clinton had been genuine about bombing in Sudan, allegedly going after Osama bin Laden, but he bombed a matchmaking factory or something, instead, we wouldn't have had 9/11 and the whole other mess too. So
that's true.
These things seem dismissible at the time, but they plant the seeds for disaster later.
They do. They do indeed. And hopefully we are not doing that right now. I do have to ask you really quickly before we move to the jokes of the week or joke of the week, depending on who's got what.
I don't have. Yeah.
I've got a couple. I got you covered. I got you covered.
Okay. All right.
I have a couple. All right. But the media coverage of this has been interesting, right?
Yeah.
I've seen Tony Blinken go out there and claim that Donald Trump was just using Joe Biden's plan. I wrote a VIP column of my own about that one because that just ain't the case. But CNN picks this up, right? And they bring on Sabrina Singh, who was the Pentagon spokesperson for most of the Biden administration, or deputy spokesperson at the Pentagon, who says, because look, Biden's plan had three phases, just like Trump's. Are you seriously kidding me? Ceasefire. I mean, Joe Biden did not invent phases. Ceasefire plans. That's how desperate these, and CNN's buying this. I can't think of it as Audie Cornish, I think was the host. Never even challenges Singh on this. It's like, And Singh is going, well, there's some differences, but it's basically the same plan. It's three phases. It's not at all the same plan.
We have to give up on those people. They're irredeemable.
Yeah, I think you're right.
It's not like smart people have changed. You and I talked about this a long time ago. Yep. It's that a whole new generation came in, fundamentally clueless. And they came in thinking, well, media fixed the government after Watergate, so let's fix everything else that's wrong with society. And whatever we need to do that, we'll do it, even if it's distorting coverage. And that's the class of journalists that we're experiencing today. And they've helped drag the media and its reputation and trustworthiness down to the lowest level ever in history. And I don't see how mainstream media can regain its credibility unless you completely change out the population of consumers. I just don't think it's possible. And they will make adjustments over a long period of time. I won't be here. But they will make adjustments because of the new media, which is you and me at Red State. The new media is developed as an alternative because nobody trusts the old media.
Yeah. And look, see, that was the topic of your other VIP piece, right? On Thursday was the Gallup poll showing that the media credibility, they've hit rock bottom and they're still digging. You and I, we talk about this quite a bit.
That's a great line. I like that.
They hit rock bottom and they're still digging.
And that's what this Pentagon former spokesman did by going on and saying that bunko.
And she works for CNN. She's a CNN analyst now. That's the other thing is that they absorbed all these hacks into journalism.
That's the escape hatch for them, and she's probably very well paid.
Oh, I'm sure she is. I mean, yeah, absolutely. And I don't begrudge her the paycheck, but I think it's really stupid of CNN to do that. So, yeah. All right. Well, I think that just about brings us around to the jokes of the week. And I got a couple of them for you.
Hit me.
All right. A judge is interviewing this woman regarding a pending divorce, right? And the judge asks, what are the grounds for your divorce? And she says, oh, about 4 acres, nice little home in the middle of the property with a stream running by. And the judge says, no. I mean, what's the foundation of the case? Oh, and she says, oh, it's made of concrete and brick and mortar. And he says, no. What are your relations like? And she says, well, I have an aunt and uncle living here in town, and my husband's parents live in town too. And he says, no. He says, do you have a grudge? And she says, no, we got a carport. And he says, lady, is there infidelity in your marriage? She goes, no, my two kids have their own stereo systems and they seem to work just fine. And he says, does your husband ever beat you up? Let me ask you that. Does your husband ever beat you up? And she says, oh, usually he's up before I am. You know, he gets up like 5 o'clock. And the judge finally throws down his pen and says, lady, why do you want a divorce? And she says, oh, I don't want a divorce. I've never wanted a divorce. My husband wants a divorce. And the judge says, why? And she says, I can't communicate with him.
Now, that's a good one. It took a while and I didn't see it coming, but that's a good one. That's a good one.
All right. One other quick one.
And then I remembered one.
Oh, well, you go ahead and I'll throw in the quick one at the end.
All right. This is a meme that's online that I just love. The police are at the scene of a crime, at a house, and a reporter shows up and says, well, what's going on? And the sergeant says, well, there's a woman that killed her husband. Because he walked in the kitchen when the floor was wet, she was washing it. And the guy says, oh my God, well, is she under arrest? He says, no, we're waiting for the floor to dry.
Yeah, well, that's a pretty, pretty good one. That's a pretty good idea. Wait for the floor to dry. Yeah. All right. Real quick, we got one more for you. Guy goes to his butcher, right? And the butcher is like one of the most intelligent, witty raconteurs he's ever met. And he kind of enjoys going to this guy because they have such great conversations. Finally, he says, why are you so brilliant? I mean, what is behind all of this? Because you're really a brilliant guy. And the guy says, well, look, I don't usually share my secret with people. He says, but you're a good customer. And so I'm going to let you in on it. He says, it's fish heads. The guy says, fish heads? He says, yeah, you eat enough fish heads, you become positively brilliant. The guy says, well, do you sell them here? He says, yeah, but only for $4 a piece. So the customer buys, you know, several of them. He comes back. Few days later, says, you know, those fish heads are disgusting, and he's not any smarter. And the butcher says, well, you didn't eat enough. So this time he goes home with like 20 fish heads, $4 each, right? Two weeks later, he comes back and he's really angry, and he says, hey, you know, I just figured this out. You're selling me fish heads for $4 each, and I can buy the whole fish for $2. You're ripping me off. And the butcher says, great, you're already smarter.
See it working. It's working.
I got both of mine from jokesoftheday.net. I love jokesoftheday.net. They always have something fun up there. So go to jokesoftheday.net if you're interested in a couple of laughs. It's always great.
That's a good one.
And you know, if you eat enough fish heads, you're gonna get smarter, or maybe you just read some more of their jokes. Well, you can
this will be up on Tuesday, but it's Monday when we're taping and it's Canadian Thanksgiving. So I think I'm going to eat turkey instead of fish heads.
I would say that you're already smarter.
That's right. Yeah.
You've gotten smarter already. Then we can talk about your continued support for Cleveland's NFL franchise, but that's a topic for another day. Andrew's headset's not working again for some reason.
Yeah. I can't hear you. I can't hear you, Ed. You're disgusting. You're like a fish head.
I am like a fish head.
A weekly fish head with you.
Yeah, and you got smarter. You're getting smarter. That's what's happening.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Well,
have a good week. And
you do the same.
Thanks.
And have a great Thanksgiving. Have a great Canadian Thanksgiving too.
Thank you very much. And thanks to everybody else for listening.